And so I would encourage people that to just constantly be on your feet and constantly networking, constantly do dinners and drinks and coffees and go to CLEs and CEs to learn as much as they possibly can about their area and the people that sort of make that area into what it is.
From the Ratner team, this is the Brooklyn Made Real Estate Show, a show about Brooklyn real estate and the professionals behind one of the hottest real estate markets in the world. Brooklyn Made Real Estate is a one-stop shop for anyone interested in New York real estate, getting connected with local experts and learning how to make smarter investment decisions. Each week, our show will feature local professionals and real estate experts that we are eager for you to meet. Our Brooklyn Made Real Estate Show is sponsored by Spartan Renovations, your high-end renovation contractor servicing Brooklyn, Manhattan, and surrounding areas. The quality of the work speaks for itself. Check out their website to see what I mean at SpartanRenovations.com. Contact Spartan today for a free consultation at 866-877-2782 or via email at contact@SpartanRenovations.com. If you are interested in sponsoring our podcast or advertising on our Brooklyn Made blog and giving your company the exposure of our audience and network, get in touch with us today at 347-762-0275 or email us at contact@brooklynmade.blog. Hello, everyone. This is Nate Paff, and today on the Brooklyn Made Show, we have a local expert, Daniel Gershberg, who's the owner and president of Gershberg Law. He's born and raised in New York.
Hey.
And he started his own law firm right out of New York law. He's done hundreds of transactions. He's really covered every angle of a real estate deal. Thanks so much for joining us, Daniel.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you specialize in?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So I'm a native New Yorker, grew up in Brooklyn, went to school in Brooklyn, a quick trip to New Jersey for college, realized I was in New Jersey, so raced back home. I went to law school at New York Law, and then right out of the gate, as you mentioned, I opened a practice in Cheapside Bay, Brooklyn, which is in the middle of nowhere, essentially. And I built that up, and probably about 5 or 6 years ago, moved to Manhattan and have had a practice there since then, always lower Manhattan as well. And most of what we do, I'd say 95% of what we do, are real estate transactions. Anything from representing a purchaser or seller to representing lenders like Wells and Citi, some developers in Brooklyn and Prospect Heights, and some commercial lenders as well. So basically, you know, everything under the sun in terms of real estate.
So you grew up in South Brooklyn. Any favorite restaurants or night spots in that area?
Yeah, absolutely. And everything that will actually give you a heart attack if you eat it for about 10 years, and that means it's great. Randazzo's, which is an awesome seafood restaurant that's been there for, I don't know, 6 million years. And then Roland Roaster, right on Emmons for roast beef sandwiches. Brendan and Carr, same thing. They go to war all the time. And L&B Spumoni Gardens for the best pizza in the world, actual real pizza, which is in Bensner. So those places were my haunting spots. And I would go there all the time. Cafes and, you know, stuff like that, we'd always, you know, very much like growing up in the Bridge and Tunnel crowd, we always ran into the city. So we definitely, you know, we weren't local when it came to that stuff. And now that I'm married and kid on the way, I'm in bed pathetically by 8:30 p.m. So I don't know much about the nightlife anymore. Yeah.
How did you get into the law?
I have no idea. I went to college and majored in philosophy and political science. And it was really either law school or Blinds to Go. And I didn't want to work at Blinds to Go.
Right.
So I went right into law school. I was never, you know, I was never someone that, you know, had a mock courtroom in my basement. I think those people are a little strange. But I did, you know, I did like the idea of learning more and learning about the law. And I actually really enjoyed law school. But I also had an entrepreneurial spirit. So I combined those two right out of law school. And I figured if I practiced, I really wanted to do it for myself rather than for someone else. And so that's kind of how I started the firm itself. But law just kind of, you know, was an organic outgrowth from majoring in a couple of things and then saying, what am I going to do from here?
Mm-hmm. What about real estate? Yeah. How did you come to focus primarily on real estate?
I always had a desire to go into real estate. I liked real estate. I liked the idea behind real estate. And frankly, when you were a one-man show at the time, real estate had very little overhead. You'd be able to take care of clients and do closings if it was just you. And so because I started out with literally nothing in my pocket, I said, I'm going to give this a try. And I really, really enjoyed it. And one of the reasons was, you know, in law, a lot of it is contentious and you're arguing with people and you're essentially almost getting into fistfights over where to put an Oxford comma. With real estate, you're representing sellers that are going to make some money when they sell or buyers that are super excited to buy their first home. So you get really good reactions from clients. So when you combine all those things, I said, this is great. And I saw that the marketplace wasn't so well served. Specifically where I was practicing, and I want to do things in a much different way. And so I kind of jumped in and I haven't looked back since.
So how do you think you've done things differently? So you saw kind of a niche, maybe an opening. What was that opening and how do you see yourself as kind of different from the rest of the field?
You know, lawyers practice in very different ways, and there's just really good lawyers out there. There's a lot of us, and a lot of us pour our heart and souls into our jobs. I never wanted to do volume, and I still don't. So, you know, there's some lawyers that will compete on the basis of price, and they will do a ton of closings, and they can do a fine job, but with very little client contact. I saw that clients, when they were buying, really needed a trusted resource to tell them what was going on. What is it that they're signing? You know, what happens after the contract? Not just the legal terms, but on a practical level, what should they look out for? What happens if there's tenants in the place, right? And so what I thought was, you know, make it significantly more immersive, make it into a true partnership. And so the way we handle closings is a really hand-holding experience. It's everything from, yes, going through the due diligence of a building to make sure it's okay, to making sure you're protecting the contract. But then it's the 20 steps after. You know, when should they apply for a loan? And how do they know whether or not their mortgage commitment that they received is okay? And what are the fees that they're going to pay? And what should they look for in the walkthrough? All those things I thought at the time weren't really being addressed to a lot of clients, or at least that's what clients were telling me. And so I said, I'm going to practice with that in mind, not really how much is this closing and how many of these can I do in a week to make X dollars, but how can I treat this client so that this client finds value in what I do? And that's, you know, served me well so far.
Well, where do you see in the city at large, where do you see as the hottest places right now in terms of overall activity and growth for real estate?
I everywhere, because I can't afford to live anywhere. And it's just, that's New York for you. I mean, look, when I started years ago, no one in their right mind would buy, let alone live in Bed-Stuy. And now Bed-Stuy is just amazingly hot in terms of the price per square foot and people developing there. The same could be said for Prospect Heights, where I've represented a couple of developers. So anything Brooklyn, realistically, is just a really great area, or at least I've seen as a really great area. And, you know, when it comes to that stuff, it's the number one, there's a lot of units on the market itself. So could there be some sort of a slowdown? Sure. But you have a lot of people that are coming to Brooklyn and just love it there. And so I think that pattern likely continues. So anything in the areas of Brooklyn Heights or Williamsburg or Greenpoint, I mean, there's people that have been there for a while, but you have people going south. You have them moving into Flatbush and Crown Heights, and you have people literally buying in Cheapside Bay. There's a broker that I know that represents these developers, and he sold out of units in this place in a very, very quick period of time. And so I think anything Brooklyn does really well. The Bronx these days is doing amazingly well, and there's a lot of developers I know that are, you know, building stuff ground up there because of the cheap land prices. So those two areas are great. The city, Manhattan, is Manhattan, and it'll always be that way. And, you know, there'll be fluctuations, but it really is just a place where, you know, people always want to live, and they'll pay whatever for a really small place. So, yeah.
What have you learned about cycles in the business? I mean, you've been around for a while, and I'm sure you've seen, you know, your peaks and valleys. And coming out of the recession of 2008-2009, you know, obviously we saw a big boom, especially in Brooklyn. How do you feel about cycles? Do you Are you skeptical about where the market is right now? I mean, how long do booms usually last, and how do you normally weather the storm if there is a pullback?
Before and actually during the time that I practiced real estate, I also practiced consumer bankruptcy. So I saw things from both sides. And I learned a lot during that time. Coming out of the recession is when I kind of started this practice up. And I've learned a couple things. Number one, I have absolutely no idea when the next, you know, bust or boom will be. And I don't think anyone does. And if they do, they're basing it on some faulty stuff. It's the same way of trying to time the stock market. But here's what I have learned. The people that have done the best are the people that buy a place and they buy it to live there for a long time. They don't treat it as an investment. They don't treat their primary residence as a bank. And so, you know, if you're buying somewhere and you can afford the mortgage payment and you know you're going to live there for at least 7 to 10 years and maybe longer, then it's likely going to be an investment that works out for you one way or another, whether it's a great place to live and you're forcing yourself essentially to save. And then you sell it for likely a higher price, or you just enjoy living there. You know, these cycles happen and they will always happen, and you will have prices that drop. I think there's outliers, outlying events. Like, for instance, you know, how many more Hurricane Sandys does it take for people to stop investing near coasts, whether it's in the Rockaways or whether it's in, you know, South Manhattan, downtown area? Those things will, I think, change the dynamic of where people live and where they invest way more than just random cycles that come into play. But we've known this stuff for God knows how long. If you can afford a place and you like a place and it fits your needs and you're going to be there for a long period of time, chances are you're likely going to be just fine. So that's kind of the advice that I would impart to anyone that's looking to buy. Don't buy on an interest-only mortgage because you think you're going to flip it in 2 years because the market's so hot. Maybe it is and maybe you do well, but maybe it's not and you're stuck with a payment you can't afford. The people that have done really well, again, are those consistent people that look at a primary residence as a place that they want to live and want to live for a long period of time.
If you could go back to the beginning of your career and do something different, what would it be?
I'd become a real estate broker.
Really?
I'm not even kidding. Yeah. I would probably maybe become a lawyer again. But really, I do love the idea of, you know, finding and servicing people's needs. I think the economy, when you look at the next 30, 40 years, is going to be sales driven and value driven versus this sort of industrial, well, where do I find a stable job, et cetera. And so if I had to do it over again, I would either work in, you know, technology somewhere or in a sales area where it's customer focused and you can sort of understand how people think and better serve their needs. Because, I think that's where our economy is going. I don't think there's any doubt about it.
What should someone be looking for in a real estate agent?
You know, I think the real estate agents that I work with that do really well are quite humble. They lack ego and they know an area really well, and you can tell that very quickly. And so, you know, you have real estate agents that obviously want the sale and they want to get things done really quickly, and they're going to push you into buying something that perhaps isn't right for you. The really good ones are the ones that say, this isn't right for you. Let's look at the next place. And they give you candid opinions as to whether or why a particular place works for you versus saying you're getting a steal on this place. So my suggestion would be to interview various real estate brokers based on referrals, based on stuff you can find online now and reviews, and have a face-to-face meeting and say, why do you think, you know, we're right for each other? What do you bring to the table? And the ones that, you know, don't mention that they've done $100 million in sales in the past year, that's probably a good start. Once you start, you know, basing it based on what you've done previously, at least for me, sets off a red flag. You're really good people. The real estate brokerage and the real estate industry gets a bad name sometimes, but you have really great people that work in your industry. And I've had the pleasure and honor of working with a lot of them. So I think when you have a face-to-face with someone like that, you get the sense almost immediately that you trust this person and that they're going to bring you value and that you can work with them for a long period of time.
What kind of advice would you give to someone looking for an attorney to represent them in a real estate transaction?
That's a great question, and I'll try and make it the least self-serving I possibly can. I really would have a conversation about availability. and who's going to be handling the file. So if I go to a doctor's office and I want to pick a particular doctor, I want that doctor. I don't want the nurse practitioner. I don't want the doctor in the group. I want that specific doctor. So I think one of the things that unfortunately clients don't do is they don't look past the price sometimes. And they anchor their decision based on whether or not they're going to save $1,000 or $2,000, because what real estate attorneys do is identical and it's not so tough. Even if all of that is true, the most important thing when you're in a stressful situation is knowing that someone's behind you there. And so I would talk to the real estate attorney, not just about how many files they've done, because that's almost irrelevant. You want to talk about who's going to be handling the entire transaction from beginning to end. Can I call you? Is there a limit to the number of times I can call you? Will you be handling, you know, the mortgage commitment process and explain to me what that is? How, you know, soon before the closing will we meet to discuss what documents I'll be signing? And make sure you're comfortable with them. And I would really look to real world referrals versus reviews. I have great reviews online, and tons of attorneys have great reviews online. But you got to figure that some of it has to sort of be, I don't want to say fluff, but there's some of us that aren't great. And there's some transactions that I, you know, did that I wish I would have done differently. And so I think personal references should come way before reviews online, to be honest with you. And again, I meet with a bunch of people just to, you know, see what kind of attorney that sort of clicks with me and my personality.
You are listening to The Brooklyn Made Show, sponsored by the Ratner Team. Follow us on iTunes, YouTube, or our blog at brooklynmade.blog. King's Auto Group is well known throughout Brooklyn for offering the best customer service in the business. Located just off the Bell Parkway at Exit 8, King's Auto Group has stocked their inventory full of certified Nissan and Infiniti vehicles. Looking for a classy, dependable car at the best possible price and the highest level customer service experience? Check out the King's Auto Group and visit them online at kingsautogroup.com. That's kingsautogroup.com. Or you can reach them at 718-646-3331. That's 718-646-3331. We're talking to Daniel Gershberg. He's the owner and president of Gershberg Law. What advice would you give to somebody starting out in your profession as a real estate attorney?
I would essentially say, if you're at your desk most of the day when you're first starting out, you're doing something wrong. If you're coming home before 5 p.m., you're doing something wrong. One of my personal heroes is a guy named Gary Vaynerchuk, who went from this guy that was the son of a wine store owner in New Jersey, and he essentially started doing YouTube videos that discussed wine in real world terms. And he translated that and transformed that into this huge online business. And now he's into marketing, and he works with huge companies to handle their marketing needs. But he really discusses hustling. And I think that in any area, be it real estate, be it law, whatever it is, I don't think enough people do a good enough job of hustling and really being out there. So if I'm a real estate attorney or anyone else, I'm going out to meet brokers. I don't care if the broker has done no sales or have done 20 sales in the past year or so. I'm introducing myself. I'm saying, look, this is who I am. This is what I can bring to the table. I'm going to community board meetings. I'm trying to understand the particular neighborhood that I'm at and what their needs are. I'm talking to doormen in buildings and saying, what's going on in this building itself? You know, are there issues that you've heard of, et cetera, just so I can understand, you know, particular knowledge base of buildings in an area. I'm searching Real Deal. I'm looking at brownstoner.com. I'm trying to educate myself in the best way that I possibly can to know my product and know my clients and know my service. So I think that many attorneys are very risk averse, and specifically ones that just, you know, sort of come out and start practicing. I think we have to stop being risk averse when it comes to learning and putting ourselves out there. We're going to fail about 1,000 times, right? My ratio is like 10 failures to one success, but each failure brings a lesson to it. It tells me who I should meet with and who's a waste of time. And I couldn't have done that without meeting those wastes of times. And so I would encourage people that are starting out, again, whether it's law or anything else, to just constantly be on your feet and constantly network and constantly do dinners and drinks and coffees and go to CLEs and CEs to learn as much as they possibly can about their area and the people that sort of make that area into what it is. And I think it pays dividends over a period of time. You plant seeds and, you know, one or two are going to hit, and then you use those to get more and more and more.
What's the biggest difference between doing a condo and a co-op deal?
The biggest difference, I would say, is you're doing due diligence on both of them, but you're dealing with a board when you're dealing with a co-op. And this is on the buy side more than the attorney side. So when you're dealing with the board, you're inherently going to think that it's going to take another 30 days more than it would on a condo to close, because you have to get a board that meets to interview the particular prospective purchaser. And if it's summertime, half of them are away on vacation. If it's wintertime, half of them don't, you know, want to deal with this when it's cold outside. So really the bigger difference is timing. But on the attorney's angle, we really look in both a condo and co-op, we do a ton of due diligence to see what's going on with that building. Are there enough financial reserves there to deal with a broken elevator or a conversion from oil to gas? Are there issues with bed bugs in the building itself? Are there complaints about noise or anything else in the actual minutes themselves? So on our end, you're doing things, pretty similarly in terms of the due diligence itself. But on the purchaser side, there's a lot of differences. Though I will say in the past year or two, I've noticed that some condos have become significantly more strict in terms of who it is that they're allowing in. So if it's foreign buyers, they want to know about the buyer themselves. Previously, they could care less. And some co-ops are being a little less restrictive because, honestly, they're being upended by condos and people wanting to be able to sell their place to whoever they want without board approval and something like that. So those are the main differences between those two.
If someone would like to reach out to you for advice or to hire you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
A bunch of different ways. They can always email me. I'm daniel@danielgershberg.com and burg.com. They can call me at 212-390-8866. I'm on Twitter at Daniel Gershberg. So any of those things. They can show up to my office. They can show up to my home. Whatever they want.
Nice.
Whatever they want.
Last question. If you were to recommend one or two business books that have really influenced you, what books would you recommend?
It's a great question. There's so many of them. Anything by Nassim Taleb. So The Black Swan is great, or Anti-Fragile is great in terms of a business book. And then there's another one, and I don't want to butcher the name, but I believe it's Letters from a Merchant Father to His Son. This is a book that was written probably close to 100 years ago. And I bought it at Strand for $1. And it just on a whim. And it's been one of the best business books I've ever read. And I've reread it God knows how many times. And it's just very simple, clear values that still work. You go into any Barnes & Noble, you look at Amazon, there's a bajillion business books by successful people that say, this is what you should do. And to me, that's retelling the same story over and over again. We know what wins the day, right? We know about value and treating your customer correctly and ethics and pricing specific to what it is that you're doing. We know those things have worked for hundreds of years, and we know that they will continue to work because people are people and they behave in very, very similar ways. So I'd encourage you or your audience to look at these kinds of books, and maybe even, I kid you not, annual letters from Warren Buffett to the shareholders on Berkshire Hathaway, which, and Charlie Munger as well, which are just really simple things that you should know about business and really about life, because they're not so different from each other, versus buying, a tech executive's top five business tips as to how to succeed, because that may have worked for him or her, but your situation could be highly different. So I'd focus on the really simple sort of business steps. And I think that, once you follow that road, you'll be totally fine.
Daniel Gershberg, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
For you, the listeners of Brooklyn Made Podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Please go to our special link and get your free copy at brooklynmadebook.com. Also, check out our preferred vendors page on our website, brooklynmade.blog, or at ratnerteamvendors.com. You can also download our new preferred vendors app in the Apple Store. Also, check out our resources page where we recommend essential tools and companies to grow your business. We hope that you found this episode valuable. We'd love to hear your opinion, so please leave a review. Be sure to subscribe to updates on our Brooklyn Made website to gain free access to countless insights into Brooklyn real estate, culture, and business. You can follow this series on iTunes, podcast, or via our blog at brooklynmade.blog. You can also listen to all of our episodes on our Ratner Team YouTube channel. Contact our team for a complimentary consultation with one of our real estate specialists to discuss your real estate goals and needs. You can reach us anytime at contact@theratnerteam.com or simply dial 347-762-0275. Thank you again for tuning in and have a great week.